The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, of course, we're all relishing this sunshine. It was long predicted a heat wave. Well, it's not 40 degrees like on the continent. It mightn't even reach 30. But listen to this nonsense on News Talk Breakfast.
There are very real world consequences, particularly for those working in these temperatures. And ironically, while Ireland has minimum workplace temperatures or ministerial regulations concerning minimum workplace temperatures of 17.5 degrees in the workplace, there are no maximum temperatures in place. And I think, you know, particularly when you think of those who have to work outside, like street cleaning, mining, you know, very specific sectors like that. But also in terms of,
it's pretty cold down a mine.
Well. I suppose the critical issue here is that we need to protect, ensure that there are protections in place for workers.
That was Labour TD and frontbench health spokesman Mary Sherlock. What? Here, please. I mean, what has the country come to? Like, I know people now working from home don't do much on a Friday. They catch up with their laundry, their Netflix and their washing and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we know what working from home is. We know that a lot of people don't do a whole lot on Friday. I was speaking to someone the other day and said, oh, we got good news. I said, oh, we're now on a 4-day week. We don't do Fridays and we're on the same pay. Look, what is wrong with this work shy, slacker culture that we're putting forward? These aren't just snowflakes, they're wet wipes. I mean, like, they're now looking for an EU directive on occupational heat exposure. Give me a break. I mean, have you not read the Draghi report that Europe has lost so much competitiveness because it is knee deep in regulation? This nonsense has got to stop. And I just think the whole work culture, and of course, there's no suggestion. You can take an annual day's leave if the weather is grand and you want to go. You want to get paid for doing nothing? Please, give me a break. Text me, 53106. What do you think? Are you in favour of a hot temperature directive? What should it be set at? I mean, like, we really have to get a grip in this country. And the next recession will tell a lot. OK, and one of the things that may prompt the next recession, of course, is the outcome of the EU-US trade tariff talks. And this has been going on since Trump was elected last November, whereby he promised to do it. Only this week, he made reference to a 200% tariff on pharma, which is vital to us, over 60 billion of exports. Well, today is supposed to be the day. A lot of people expecting a letter from Donald Trump as he has sent to Japan, Canada and others. And the EU Trade Commissioner expects to receive a letter today from Donald Trump disclosing the new tariff deal between the two trading partners. Now, remember, since April, a 10% tariff has broadly affected across the sectors. There's different things for car, steel, aluminium, 25%. So what can we expect? It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Suzanne Lynch, who I've talked to in many previous incarnations and The Times and Politico and so on. She is the Brussels Bureau Chief with Bloomberg, no less. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, Ivan. Good to be with you.
What are you expecting today?
Well, look, I heard you talking about Friday working. I can tell you here, they're all on tenterhooks here at the EU, waiting for what's going to come from Trump, we presume, today. But of course, we're not sure. Now, the EU had signalled over the last few weeks that it was close to agreeing very much a provisional agreement, maybe a 5-page document we were hearing, with the Trump administration. And it was prepared to accept a kind of 10% base tariff rate with exemptions, but it could live with that. They're still hoping that's going to happen. But what we've seen over the last few days is a ratcheting up of pressure by Trump on other trading partners. So last night, he announced new tariffs on Canada. He's been very tough on Japan, Vietnam, you know, a lot of other big, Brazil this week. So I think people are getting nervous. I mean, what's going to happen? They have this provisional deal that they are happy enough with, but whether Trump actually signs this, whether he puts something else in the mix at this point, I think that's a concern.
getting into the weeds of this, are there two types of tariffs? There, you know, there are reciprocal tariffs, and then there are what are called Section 232, Trade Expansion Act 1962, which is the big one for us, which is pharma. Could you maybe explain the difference between reciprocal tariffs and those other tariffs?
Yeah, so the reciprocal tariffs are kind of a across-the-board tariff that would be put on. And say, for example, the EU could live with 10%. Now, within those reciprocal ones even, they're looking for some exemptions, maybe on aircraft, spirits, that kind of thing, to maybe get something lower. But then you have these other tariffs, which people refer to as sectoral tariffs. And they're the tariffs that currently exist on cars, on steel and aluminium, for example. Now, the reason the steel and aluminium tariffs go back years, so they were able to be kind of activated pretty quickly, those sectoral tariffs, because there had already been a precedent. What Trump is doing is that he's also doing this investigation, as you said, the Section 232 investigation into pharma. And that has to go through a system and it goes to Congress, I believe, as well. And that's in the works. And so he may come out and say, on the basis of that investigation, we are doing X on pharma. So the problem is for Europe that it's no good, if you like, just getting the 10% across the board tariff if all these other tariffs on sectoral sections are coming. So they're going to want to have some kind of a, maybe not a guarantee, but a promise that, you know, pharma won't be included, for example. The other thing is the auto tariffs that are already there. Germany, it's not just Germany, but Germany is leading the charge there and trying to get some kind of a deal on that. Like maybe more European companies would build their cars in America. So BMW, for example, has got factories in America. But then you've got other car brands like Ferrari, which don't. So are they going to be then left out in the cold? So, and then you've got other car, like smaller countries, maybe in Central and East European countries like Slovakia, Hungary, who are part of the automobile supply chain. So they will be impacted. So, I mean, for Ireland, the pharma is obviously huge for Ireland, but not just Ireland. You've got Germany, you've got Denmark, and you've got Belgium as well. But not every, this is the issue for the EU. If you're a country like Portugal, for example, they don't particularly export more to the US. Now, they are on the same page as the rest of the EU in that they will have a knock-on effect. They supply things to Germany that then go on to the US. But, you know, some countries are affected more than others on this.
Now, there's...
Yeah, no. And that's it. But that's the kind of the context in that, like, not for us, pharma, for Ireland, pharma is important. It's not necessarily important for everyone else.
OK, now what they've spoken about today is a framework agreement. But as I know, over the years with the GATT agreement for the World Trade Organization, the legal treaties for these can take years and years to put together. I mean, I can't see... Best case scenario, I can't see that there won't be continued uncertainty.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is, say, the UK got an agreement. Now, they're a different case because they don't have the trade surplus that the EU has, but they've got an agreement. But that's a pretty, I'll call it a skeleton agreement as well. Like, there's a lot to be filled in. So we're looking at something like that. Then that buys the EU time. That's the thinking until August the 1st, which is now the new deadline, to, you know, get breathing space and try and do a bigger agreement on these sectoral tariffs, for example. Like, that's the strategy. Now, the problem is, for example, we just saw this morning, there was a report here coming in at Bloomberg from Vietnam. They've got a trade agreement and they've been saying they thought they were getting, you know, 10 to 15% that they were negotiating, but then Trump put on 20%. Like, if that's what's happened. Now, maybe the other way of looking at this is that earlier in the week, Trump was relatively positive. I think he mentioned Ursula von der Leyen by first name, which was is a big change because he's had very minimal conversations with the EU. He doesn't like the EU. He's made that very clear. He's ideologically opposed to multilateral institutions, including the EU. So there was a bit of positive mood music from him during the week on that. So the other way, I mean, what might happen is that today they get this letter and it's kind of what the negotiators have been expecting. Now, the EU ambassadors representing all the 27 countries are here and they're due to meet today at 2:30. And now that's fluid, but they're kind of on standby. And then on Monday, EU trade ministers, including the tánaiste Simon Harris, will be here in Brussels for a scheduled meeting. So, you know, possibly we could have a situation where they take a bigger decision on this.
Now, the EU have, say if things go badly, they have two kind of reprisal mechanisms. One for about 20 billion of trade and one for 95 billion of trade. Are they actually configured to happen on a due date? And you know, what if the thing goes ugly, what can we expect?
Yeah. So the 21 billion that they have ready, they can do kind of straight away, a bit more. The 95 billion is more long term. But there's also another wrinkle, which is the steel and aluminium tariffs, which have been on and off over the years, even during Biden administration. They are due. They have a deadline pretty soon. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's next week. So a decision will have to be made on that one. So I could see a situation where the EU doesn't want to provoke things and it might just kind of continue keeping those tariffs off. But you're right. Like, that's one of the big debates here. How far can the EU push back? So the EU has a lot of leverage here. Big market of 450 million people. And it's got these countermeasures in the bag. But there are mixed opinions. France has been probably the loudest voice behind the scenes, if you like, saying, you know, we need to fight back a bit more on this. But I think what's happened now is that there's a sense for everyone that that ship may have sailed, that at this stage, you know, if they do impose anything, well, that's really going to exacerbate the situation. And if they were really going to do something, maybe that should have been earlier. So I don't know if the appetite is there among all the countries to really escalate this. Now, unless something completely unforeseen comes out in the next 24 hours, but I think if they get the 10% tariff and a 5-page document that they're happy enough with, I don't think we're going to see any retaliation at this point from the EU.
Suzanne, I'm surprised at you. Back in the days in the Irish Times, you would call it aluminium. You're now calling it aluminium.
Well, that was
like, 4 years
because
you
worked
for Bloomberg.
No, that was 4 years in Washington for the Irish Times when the steel and aluminium, I was Americanized.
But it is aluminium.
But to be fair, it's a good point because people, I mean, the steel and aluminium issue was there under Biden. It's not that everything was rosy under Biden with the EU. I mean, Biden, you know, continued those tariffs, for example. So, I mean, obviously, this is a lot more serious if this follows through. But, you know, we and under Trump, one, there was a lot of threats on trade as well. So I would have been covering that very closely. Of course, the EU is much more prepared this time because the last time it was shocked. And look, it's a part of a broader realization by the EU that just with defense and now with trade, there is a realization that they cannot depend on the US as a trusted ally to the extent that they have traditionally. And I think more importantly, that this could be the new reality, that this, you know, that the old America is gone, that if the success of Republican administrations here, that this could be a reality. It's the same for the pharma tariffs. Yes, people are saying, well, look, this might blow over. It also might not, depending what way the political winds are blowing in the United States and whether we are in for a period of 10 or 20 years with a Republican administration that's much more protectionist.
All right. Suzanne Lynch, Brussels Bureau Chief with Bloomberg, telling us about the sense of expectation with all the EU ambassadors there that there may be an imminent dispatch from Trump to give clarity on the situation. Thank you indeed for joining us. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.